I always read it my own way, and to me that's God answering a question, so I got a lot out of this book, and I'll be referring to it a lot. In this book, he posits that humans have evolved to be dreamers, and that this ability to dream may make us evolutionarily successful. Now, strong dreamers could foretell the approach of enemies or locate food in times of hunger based on their dreams, and therefore they were more able to survive. That's how they, the evolutionary aspect of successful strong dreamers came to be. There are numerous examples of the survival of the strongest dreamers in the scriptures as well as in our own Mormon history, and our church is founded on the faith of dreamers and has been led into being by guidance that comes from dreams and visions. My question is, as beings that seem to be genetically programmed for dreaming, do we take those dreams seriously today and make use of their power? Can God talk to us through our own dreams? Now, I'm a biologist by trade, and all good biologists are taught the theory of natural selection. Darwin's theory of natural selection, you're probably familiar. I want to especially point out four principles in this theory. The first one is that within a population, there's a great variety of physical and psychological features. Without that variety, nature couldn't select one particular adaptation that's successful. The second principle is that much of this variation is heritable. The third one is that those individuals that are the best adapted for their environment will be the most successful at reproducing and passing on their characteristics. So that over time, the fourth principle, the characteristics of the most successful individuals become widespread, become a common trait in the population. And if you remember back in high school biology, you probably heard Baptiste Lamarck's theory of how the giraffe got a long neck posed versus Darwin's natural selection version of the giraffe. Jean-Baptiste Lamarck thought that the giraffe wanted a long neck, so he stretched and stretched and stretched his neck, and he finally got a long neck and passed it on to his offspring. Not at all what Darwin would say. Darwin would say there are all kinds of giraffes that had various lengths of necks, and the ones that had the longest necks were able to get the most food and therefore live long enough to survive and pass on their genes, and that's how you get giraffes with long necks now. And we don't see giraffes with short necks. They didn't survive. So that's the point, that some characteristic that is successful in a population can become widespread because it's genetically inherited. You have successful reproducers and they're passing on those genes. And that's what I think about dreaming. I believe in this process. I believe it applies to the importance of being able to dream in our species. If dreamers are able to survive long enough to pass on their genes, and if they're somehow better at finding mates than non-dreamers, then the result is a shift in the population towards dreamers. And evidence for this is pretty easy to find. First of all of us dream. And if you fall asleep in my session, I won't be sad as long as you wake up and tell us your dream. We do so from a very early age. It now appears that infants in the third trimester of development are in REM sleep 100% of the time. And of course, REM sleep is when we dream. So unborn babies could be dreaming for about 3 months before they're even born. Not only do we dream, also many of us dream about future events. I know that all of you have probably experienced this. The experience of deja vu is familiar to about 70% of the population, according to one study done by David Ryback in Georgia in the 1980s. This experience is a feeling that whatever is happening at the moment is somehow familiar, though the people, places, and or events involved in the situation are new. The familiarity stems from having had a dream that foretold or resembled the new situation at some point previous to its occurrence. If our ancestors were able to somehow survive better because of this ability to dream the future, and they survived long enough to pass on this gift to us, then it's completely reasonable to believe that a great majority of the current population would experience such prophetic night visions. And I know I've had dozens of these things. It'll be like, I had this dream when I was 12. I'm now 24, and I'm having this experience, and I remember I dreamed this. But you just remember the dream. Not very many of us write it down, so that's why it's hard for us to accept deja vu as fact, because we don't have a lot of evidence. We just remember that we dreamed it. Dreaming is a remarkable event in every culture. And in many indigenous cultures, the strong dreamers are revered as leaders in the best portions. They have the best access to mates. Native Americans, Malaysian Tanar, Aborigines, these are just a few of the indigenous cultures that have strong dreaming traditions where people who gain insight or wisdom through dreams are respected, carry great authority, have positions of leadership, have special privileges in society. But probably the most convincing evidence for the idea that dreaming makes us better at surviving, and thus evolutionarily favorable, is that we're not the only creatures that dream. Other mammals seem to have this adaptation as well. Particularly cats and dogs. It's a hallmark of evolutionary theory that if an adaptation proves useful to one species, then it should be useful to anything that has a similar niche. The only problem with this bit of evidence is that we have no idea what the dreams are about. Other animals undergo REM sleep and seem to have nightmares or pleasing dreams. We just don't know the content and probably never will. Unless you teach your cat to talk, and then you got to call me. It could be that the very act of dreaming is a bonus in the survival game, regardless of the messages contained in the dream. And I really need to stress that. It could be that the very act of dreaming is a bonus in the survival game, regardless of the messages contained in the dream. I really believe that, too. But then, there are definitely messages contained in at least some of human dreams, and that's very hard to overlook. It's my contention that dreams have been an important means of communication between God and humanity throughout our spiritual history. Let me lay some groundwork for this idea by referring you to a collection of scriptures that reveal dreams and dreamers and the purposes served by the dream. This collection of scriptures is by no means comprehensive. It's a sampling from the topical guide and represents dreams that move the action in the stories. It also reveals the significant role that dreams and visions played in the development of Judaism, Christianity, and Mormonism. There's 47 scriptures here to look over, and they come from all the canonized works. And I want to just point out that I summarized, okay, the book, the scripture, and the dreamer, those are easy to pull out of the top of the guide. The dreamer vision is my summary, and the purpose is my added thing. That's not in the top of the guide. It's what I perceive as the purpose of the dream. And when I went through this list, more than half of the dreams were used for prophesying future events. And how could that knowledge of the future be beneficial? Foreknowledge contains what you do or how you do it. It can save you from life-threatening situations, such as Pharaoh's dream of the years of famine, or Joseph's dream that he and Mary should not return to Herod. It can bring comfort that reduces stress, which also improves your health and makes you more likely to survive, or pass on your genes, make you reproductively successful. Foreknowledge can also raise your status and give you power. There's a really great example of that with Daniel. Maybe you are familiar with this dream, but the last one on the first page. In Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar was the king. He has this dream. He wakes up. He can't remember what the dream was, but it was important. So he asked all of his wise men to not only interpret the dream, but tell him what the dream was. And they said, but king, nobody can do that. And so he's ready to kill everyone who can't do it. And suddenly Daniel appears and says, okay, calm down, I'll do it. And he goes and prays and asks God for the vision. And sure enough, God tells him not only the dream, but the interpretation of it. And he's able to go back to Nebuchadnezzar and tell him what a great and wise king he is, of course, kiss up. This is what you dream, this is what it means, and he gets promoted because, you know, he's the smart wise man now. So this led to a favorable position not only for Daniel but for the Jewish people in this society. Same is true of this, as you can tell. Joseph with the coat of many colors translating Pharaoh's dream, and became second in command. An increase in power or wealth is directly correlated with your ability to survive and reproduce. There's also evidence that these scriptures, that people who weren't prophets or great leaders, evidence in scriptures that the people who were having these dreams in the beginning weren't necessarily prophets or great leaders. They were average people. The servants in Pharaoh's household dreamed of their future fortunes. A man in Gideon's army had a dream that they would triumph. He's just a regular old soldier, but that inspired not only himself, but Gideon as well, and they won the battle. Cornelius, not even a Jew in the New Testament, but was given a dream from God in order to help the missionary work spread the Gentiles. He was told in a dream to seek out Peter, and when Peter came to his house, that's where he had the vision about all the forbidden foods that he was told to kill and eat. And that he finally understood after three times of the vision that God wanted him to take the message to the Gentiles, which changed history. In fact, one could argue that most of these people were great leaders at the time of their dream or vision, but became great as a result of having the dream. This is certainly true of all the minor prophets. As the Old Testament, after Isaiah, just about every prophet in there starts out with the first verse of their book is, and in such and such a year, the vision of the Lord came unto me, and I was made a prophet. That's how they got called to be prophets. They had some dream or vision, and they were not that important beforehand, but they became important enough afterwards to have a book in the Bible. And that's also true of Lehi. I find it very interesting that all these dreams and visions got recorded. Take Solomon's dream, for example. He has a dream that God's asking him what gift he desires as the king. Solomon asks for wisdom. This pleases God in the dream, and he grants the wit. This is some sort of test which Solomon passes, and God takes the opportunity to give Solomon some advice as well, sort of tacked on at the end. Now, if you had a dream in which you asked God for wisdom and he gave it to you, like particular wisdom, so you had a big problem at work and you wanted some clues to solve it, and in your dream you're asking God for some clues and you get it in your dream. You wake up with the dream of, oh, that's what I should do. I doubt you'd go running to your boss and say, I know what we should do, I had this dream. Because you want to be brilliant without having God visiting you in your dream, probably. So why did this dream get recorded? Why is it part of our spiritual legacy? I think that the dreams, especially like the one that Solomon had, got recorded precisely because it made Solomon seem more respectable, even to be more like leader material. Dreamers are like Rodney Dangerfield in our world today. They get no respect. But I think in the early days of Judaism, dreams were a mark of God's chosen people. This increased their likelihood of survival. And in Solomon's case, it sure made him more reproductively successful since he had over 1,000 wives. It also meant that paying attention to your dreams was important because it can influence your fortune. If you were paying attention, God might send you a prophetic dream and you could launch a career on that, like Obadiah and Hosea and all those Old Testament prophets. You get a vision, you hang out your prophet sign, you're in business. Okay, not only in the Old Testament and the New Testament, but also in the foundation of the Mormon Church, dreams were a means for survival, literally a means for survival. In the old world, early Christians had no phones, faxes, pagers, computers, whatever. And so dreams were a great system for warning and moving people into the right place at the right time, which improved their ability to survive and pass on their legacy. And I believe that in the establishment of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, dreams were a very useful tool for these same purposes. Some examples. Lorenzo Snow and Parley P. Pratt. Lorenzo Snow had a biography written about him, a very thorough, wonderful biography written by Eliza R. Snow. I think that was his daughter. Parley P. Pratt wrote an autobiography, and they both shared lots of experiences in their biographies of having been warned in dreams of people that meant to do them harm. They were able to avoid harmful situations because of these warning dreams. Something would start to feel familiar, deja vu, and they'd say, oh, I know what's going to happen next, and go the other way. The warnings enabled them to avoid dangerous situations, and they also were able to come across a lot of people in their missionary efforts that had been told in some recent dreams that the missionaries were coming. And that, I can't tell you how many times, there were literally tens and dozens of examples that were recorded in those two biographies of people saying, we know you're the right missionaries because we dreamed you were coming. Another really good example of dreams that lay the groundwork for missionary work is a rather famous dream that helped establish a church in New Zealand. And this was the dream of a Maori chief. Many of his people had been drawn to other churches that began springing up all over the country in New Zealand in the 1800s. He had a dream that the missionaries from the True Church of God would come in pairs and would be speaking the Maori tongue. He told his people this dream, and not long after, who shows up? The Mormon missionaries, walking around in pairs, speaking the Maori language. Nearly the entire population of the Maoris was converted, and the church continues to be very influential among this group of people. There were also many dreams that comforted the dreamer, encouraged him or her to keep working or living. One that really impressed me from the history of the church, which impressed me that the history of the church recorded dreams too, another impressive thing, but there's a story of a sister who was dying and had a dream that if she received a blessing from another Evans, she would be healed. She told the dream to her family, of course, they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off trying to find Elder Evans. They can't find him. He happens to walk by the house. She sees him out the window, calls him in. After she gets a blessing from Elder Evans, she lived several more years, and she was on her deathbed. I'm sure that anyone with a pioneer background, and I'm sure there's several of you with a pioneer background, can list off a few cases in which dreams were an important part of the conversion or survival of your personal ancestors. There are more faith-promoting stories that involve dreams than there are handcarts in Utah history. Mormons have a powerful dream heritage, and I'm convinced that the early members of this church were able to survive persecution, demanding physical struggles, long missions, and several migrations, in part because they were given dreams that warned, sustained, comforted, and guided them. Surely, this is evidence that dreams improve the fitness of our pioneer ancestors in their struggle to survive and thrive. This dreaming heritage that Mormons have was criticized from the beginning when Joseph Smith had the vision that set him apart from the rest of the world. He was told that dreams and visions were things of the past, things the ancient apostles received, but in modern times God did not talk to man that way, and that's recorded in Joseph Smith's history. This modern logic that dreams and visions are not how God currently communicates with humans remains strong in our world today, and it's not a welcoming climate for dreamers. Since the late 1800s, people have begun to discredit dreams as being unimportant. Dreams are thought of as random neural switches that your brain tries to explain by making up a story. How often have you heard, or that's actually what I learned in my neurology class, by the way, at Stanford, they said, dreams are neural switches, and your brain is good at making up a story. Well, maybe that may be true, but I think there's more to it than that. How often have you heard or thought the statement, it was only a dream? Now, what do you think would have happened if, say, Joseph, Mary's husband, had decided that his dreams about staying away from Herod were just dreams and nothing more? How grateful are we that he didn't think it was just a dream and head for enemy territory? In terms of the survival of the Jews and the Christians, dreaming was crucial. An example of how modern logic reduces the importance of dreams today can be seen in how our history books get written. Did you know that Harriet Tubman, the escaped slave who led over 300 slaves to freedom on the Underground Railroad, was able to find safe places to stay and routes out of the South by dreaming? And I tell you, the introduction in this book is all about this story of Harriet Tubman, and I was thoroughly amazed. She had a gift, a condition similar to narcolepsy. She would inexplicably fall asleep literally on the road in the middle of some task and have a dream about where she was to go next, what house she was to apply to for aid. She would wake up with total recall of her dream and follow it like a map. She couldn't read a map. She didn't have a map, but she would dream and follow that map. It never failed. On over 30 journeys, she safely led hotly pursued slaves to freedom this way. But that's not mentioned in any history books. Robert Moss did extensive research using biographies and written accounts from Harriet and some of the people she rescued in the days preceding the Civil War to piece together her remarkable story. History books are not the only places where dreams are sacrificed to the modern logic. Take a look at your own life. If you had a dream in which you were told to receive a strong impression that you should move to another state, just pick up and go as soon as possible, how would you respond to that? Most of us would say it was just a dream and would forget it. We don't value our own dreams as a source of instruction, comfort, advice, or prophecy. What do you tell a child who is sharing a dream with you? It was just a dream. Why do you say that? That's what your parents told you. When did that start? When did people stop believing in the power of their own dreams? My theory is that when modern science took hold of society, almost as firmly as if it were a religion, dreams got shoved into the back seat. Modern science demands evidence, proof that something is accurate or valid. Dreams are hard to prove as a method of knowing the future, since they may foreshadow something that is years away, and they leave no tangible proof unless the dreamer is recording the dream before the event it foreshadows comes to pass. And yet, as a species, we can't overcome our fascination with dreams. Hundreds of books are written about them. Dreams are used in psychotherapy as a way to unlock the secrets of the psyche. We wake up from odd dreams and have the urge to share them with each other. We may not take them very seriously, but we're fascinated by them and enjoy having them. And Mormons, as much or more than any other religious sect, have good reason to pay heed to their dreams, since we have such a strong heritage of God communicating with his people through dreams. You'd think that instead of enrichment night, we would have dream journal night, where we get together and share our latest dreams and puzzle out their meanings looking for God's hidden messages. Humans are pre-programmed for dreaming. Our brains are set up for this. Our ancestors passed on the genes and the heritage that enables us to dream. The question is, can we plug into the power in those dreams? Can we see them for the magic beanstalk that they are? So the last part of my talk is about becoming a visionary. Now, I think knowing what our dreams signify to us is a way of knowing ourselves. If you're tuned into what your mind is telling you as you sleep, you can understand what really concerns you, what stress you're under. Especially for me, that's what I always have, stress dreams. I'll wake up and I'll know I'm stressed out, but I didn't realize it before because I just had a stress dream. You can understand what really concerns you, even find ways to solve problems and mend relationships. You can be inspired and challenged and comforted, even brought closer to God through your own dreams. If dreaming is something you pay attention to, it can even become a reliable means of communication between God and you. If God knows you're listening in some way, he's likely to say something to you. And this use of dreams can have the power to make your own life more survivable, as it did for our progenitors. I have a real-life experience with this. I don't have very many, unfortunately. I wanted to do this talk because I'm interested in the topic. 5 years ago yesterday, my mother passed away. And it was a very hard thing for me at the time. And I didn't understand it at all, but I got really numb emotionally because I think I couldn't have dealt with it. I would not have known what to do to deal with it. And I was so busy. I was getting my master's degree, and I was moving, and I put it all away somewhere and locked it up. I really resonated this morning in devotional. Bob Reese was reading about how Stuart Mattis had never told his mother that he loved her because he locked all the love that he possessed up so tightly inside himself, afraid that if anything, any kind of love slipped out, it would all come pouring out, and he would lose his standing in the church. He'd become unfaithful because of that. And I really understand that because with the horror and the hurt and the pain of my mother's death were all locked up inside of me, and I wouldn't deal with it. And I kept having these dreams, though. I would dream that I was dying by suffocation. That's how my mom died. And I would wake up from these dreams without, I couldn't breathe. They were panic attacks. I'd have to get outside and force air in my lungs that way before I could breathe. And the dreams finally forced me, I was really worried for my health. And they forced me to ask God if my mom was okay and where she was. And I got the strongest, swiftest answer, barely had the question out of my mouth. And all of a sudden, I felt God just pour into me this answer that I've got her, and she's just fine. And no more dreams. You know, I could move on. A lot of the emotions started to come out there, and I could work through them more. And the dream was an answer to me. Okay, so I didn't receive revelation for the entire church. That's fine with me. It really helped me through an important part of my life. If this seems interesting to you, then you might look at handout number 2. That's the yellow one. This is a suggested dream journal. My invention, but you can buy these in bookstores, and you can also invent your own. A suggested dream journal. The premise here is that the only way to really come to understand the power of your own dreams and trust them, or trust what they tell you, is by keeping track of them and sorting out what they mean to you. The first step in unlocking the power of your dreams is learning how to understand what they're saying to you. There are many dream dictionaries available in bookstores and on the internet today. These are lists of symbols and what they typically mean. While these may have some value in getting you to think about what your own dreams could mean, I think it's more important to try to understand what the symbols in your dreams mean to you. I think you have to develop your own personal lexicon of dream symbols, because everyone has different experiences with things and people in life, and those things and people end up being symbols in our dreams. For example, a person who has a really good relationship with her real-life sister could dream of having a sister, but in the dream, the sister is someone you don't know yet. And you decide that the dream means that you're going to meet someone with whom you will have a close, positive relationship. However, if the dreamer has a bad relationship with her sister, then the dream takes on another meaning entirely. That's why you have to develop your own understanding of what the symbols that appear in your dreams mean to you. In order to develop this familiarity with how your mind speaks in symbols, you have to record the dreams and puzzle over them. Dreams can be very elusive. We forget them almost as soon as we awaken from them. But like anything, with practice, you get better at recalling things, and you can remember them long enough to write them down. And that's where the dream journal comes in. If you make it a practice to write in it every day, this habit will pay off in short order. In just a short time, you'll start to see relationships and patterns that you may have never noticed before. Symbols will start to seem obvious. The next step is to unlocking the power of your dreams. It's to refer back to the ones you have recorded. That's why it's good to give them titles, which is one of the things on the handout. You should, after you've dated, you should title it so that you can refer back to that particular dream. You may start to see that you dream about certain people or events whenever you're stressed about your job or having difficulty in a relationship. Many people have patterns to their dreams, and knowing yours will help you be aware of events in your own life that need more attention, as well as cluing you into when a dream is different and possibly a communication from God. For example, let's say you typically dream of your parents when you have trouble with your boss, sort of a common phenomenon. You have a problem with an authority figure. You dream about other perceived authority figures. And you know there is a pattern that you typically dream about your parents when you have this problem. You might be more likely to sit up and take notice the first time you dream of someone or something else when struggling with your boss. This could tell you that the struggle is more important, or of a different nature, or there could be some guidance involved in the new dream. Another reason to write these dreams down is so you can go back and find them when they actually happened, the deja vu thing. One reason deja vu is so mysterious is because most people don't write down their dreams. So when things happen, they can only think they dreamed it. They have no evidence to hold up. But if you're recording your dreams, eventually you will have a deja vu, and then you can go back to the dream and write about how it came to pass and what the symbols really meant. The ultimate goal for recording dreams and becoming familiar with what your dreams mean to you would be to get messages from God. Dreams can be a source of guidance and comfort, a signal that you're under too much stress, a reminder of things you've forgotten. All of these things can help us to survive better. But being prepared to get a message from God and trust it and act on it is another level of improved survival. It probably won't happen without some effort, but I think it's our genetic and spiritual heritage, and therefore it's completely possible. My husband gave me a really good tip for a verse in Moroni 7, verses 37 and 38. Behold, I say unto you, nay, for it is by faith that miracles are wrought. And it is by faith that angels hear and minister unto men. Wherefore, if these things have ceased, woe be unto the children of men, for it is because of unbelief, and all is vain. And no man can be saved according to the words of Christ, save they shall have faith in his name. Wherefore, if these things have ceased, then has faith ceased also. And awful is the state of man, for they are as though there had been no redemption made. The point being, you have to believe that the dreams can give you messages, and you have to take action on that before they'll actually start meaning anything to you, otherwise it'll just be an interesting diversion. In any event, I think our society needs to pay more attention to dreams because we don't spend the time to stay in touch with ourselves during waking hours. Meditation, reflection, time to ourselves, these are considered luxuries in our modern lives, and a huge number of people simply don't make time for any of them. I believe that's when dreams become even more important. As our minds seek to use the tranquility of sleep from making known to us our own needs, our survival as a species may literally depend on our ability to dream in this case. I wish you great, insightful dreams and the determination to learn from them.
And I apologize, I don't have a biography of Elizabeth Bonnet, but I'd like to introduce Murray Blanchard.
Hello, I'm a psychotherapist and very interested in dreams, which I think don't think the people who asked me to respond knew. But I listen to many dreams during the week of clients as well as pay attention to my own, and certainly have clinical evidence that they are very important messages. I don't know if dreams have survival value. That's one of your major premises. I know that Stephen Jay Gould, the paleontologist, talks about how possibility that everything that humans have may not have survival value. It may be a residual that has left over in the course of development, like females' ability to experience orgasm. Does that help the species reproduce? Or is it something, displeasure that's produced, is it just a residual of some other kind of development taking place? Likewise, I wonder, Bach's wonderful musical ability, which obviously had a genetic basis because he passed some of that on to his children, his B minor mass, his counterpoint, listening to a organ chorale prelude, Christ lay in the bonds of death, his ability to do that, that have survival value for him as a species, I don't know. But certainly the ability to be sexually responsive and experience pleasure, the ability to listen to music and be moved, has survival value for me and probably all of us in our present lives, and I think dreams are the same. Whatever their ultimate meaning in the course of the species, I think they're extremely important in our personal lives, whether we pay attention to them or not. But as we pay attention to them and reflect on them and share them and put them into a form other than the dream image itself, they are consolidated, and like parables, they are available for us to read on deeper and deeper levels, particularly if we keep them recorded. What I feel about dreams is they are analogous to other kinds of experience where the conscious waking mind is stilled, and we therefore are able to perceive deeper levels of knowledge than we can when we're engaged in our beta waking rhythms, akin to meditation experiences, where particularly I'm thinking of mindfulness. One step back from the content of what's going on and observes and works on stilling the mind, but at the same time is aware but not engaged in what's going on. Or other meditative practices like yoga or Tai Chi, or producing art, particularly when one's producing before the period for the analytic left side is making it more acceptable to the world at large, with the symbolic value of art and now responding to it on that particular immediate level is akin to the dream experience, where we're open without the analytical part of the brain, working to confuse the message that comes. I, too, in physiological psychology at UCB, was introduced to dreams of random neural events that we impose meaning on. And certainly, when you're looking at them, with dreams usually have some part of day or recent events or residue or symbols. And many people think, oh, I dreamed about that because I saw that on television. But when you see dreams over time and see the personal symbols repeated and a message that keeps coming through again and again in different forms, you have to believe it's not just day residue, it's not just random neural events. Perhaps it is a neural event, though, that is speaking to us when we're still enough to get those neural networks through to and available to consciousness so we can reflect on them later. I think similar to what Kristen Rand Stengel was saying about some other things, dreams are part of process. She was responding to Richard Reed talking about the liturgy of having so much meaning on a symbolic level that we as Mormons often miss in, because we have lost, we don't celebrate the Christian liturgical year. Dreams are a part of an ongoing process that each of us individuals have, and probably wider societies too, because we respond to our social surrounds certainly in a part of that. But if we see them as part of a process rather than a static answer or a static message, and look to each dream, but also look to what the dream will open to the future, then they become even more meaningful as ways of messaging us about our own lives. I think we don't pay attention as a society to dreams for the same reason, not only because of the scientific method, because we all want to feel like we're in control of things, and imposing control on things, we think about things and we impose a cognitive order. If you are interested in dreams, if you are a practicer of meditation, you know you have to give up the conscious control in order to experience a deeper order. And you have to be open and receptive rather than actively imposing an order that you, or a paradigm that you're already in, you're already holding in order to receive that message. Therefore, the more practiced we become in the consciousness of our dreams, or in meditation practices, or in responding or creating art, the more we actively develop this passivity as sort of a paradox, which enables us to gain knowledge, which in turn influences our conscious life. But I believe from my clinical work and personal life, and I expect you do from what you do, that what we learn is actually more valuable knowledge than what we can come up with. Although I believe it's extremely valuable to discuss whether Bach wrote a B or a B flat in a certain manuscript, and to talk about how many angels can sit on the head of a pin, and what this and that scripture means. I think those things are important, but then we have to leave that behind and allow ourselves to be open to whatever other things, other knowledge that we have, which we can't quantify yet, but probably also has physical, in the sense of physics and chemistry basis. We just don't understand how it comes about as easily, although we're learning a lot more with brain imaging techniques now. I certainly agree and support everything you said about interpreting things individually. It's extremely dangerous to interpret somebody else's dream, I think symbol books are nice to get you started, but your own associations bring up your own meanings. The sister really is very different from one person to another. When a group therapy is discussing the dream, each person can have a different take on that dream and enrich the dreamer's response to that dream by their own interpretations. But when a person is saying, this is what it means, in a way it's trying to control, and you lose the sense of that. But there are certain themes that, if you're dreaming about earthquakes and Holocaust, are you talking about something where there was a devastation in your own past life or sensing something that's very devastating that is going on now that you need to attend to. Dream symbols have some common meanings you have to attend to. The differences and the individual differences that you put into your dreams tend to be the most important. Why did I make that Volkswagen yellow in this dream? Why did I dream that somebody was 45 years old? And begin associating to those and pondering on those, and you may or may not get the answer right away, but the fact that you're pondering on them maybe 2 years later, maybe 2 weeks later, you'll have one of those switches, I call them kaleidoscopic switches, where all of a sudden you'll have a deeper knowing of what you need to know. Earlier in the day, temple symbolism was talked about, and Senator Farnsworth was talking about experiencing the temple by being present for the symbolism, and individual response to the symbols was deepening the temple experience rather than taking someone else's imposition, imposed meaning of the temple experience as the experience itself. So that was just a perfect prelude to this, or expansion of what we're talking about, because Sonia's talking about an individual and very deep connection that comes through our own ability and our own symbols and relates to spiritual symbols, which will be different for each of us. So much that has gone on today, from liturgy to temple symbolism to dreams, has been talking about things that are beneath the analytical level, but certainly equally, if not more valid, to our lives. And so thank you very much for what you've shared with us and the thoughtfulness that you've put into it, and I hope you hear more from you in the future.
It's been a pleasure chairing this event. I think officially we are done, but if anybody has any quick questions that they would like to address to Angela or Marie? Yeah.
What about people who don't dream? I mean, I'm not one of them. This is probably a better question for Marie. I know of times in people's lives when they don't dream, or they don't remember dreams, but I think that the fact of the matter is everyone needs to have REM sleep or you'd be dead. And during REM sleep is when you dream. And it may be that when you wake up, you weren't in REM sleep. You can be in a deeper sleeping wave pattern, and then you might not remember a dream because you weren't having one when you woke up. Or it may be that when you awake from REM sleep, you don't remember your dreams right away. Or maybe you don't. If you're not in the habit of paying attention to them, and they're not important to you, you may think you don't dream. You want to add on to that?
Just in my limited experience with my own sample of people, a lot of people come in and don't dream, but when they start attending and working and have somebody else who can respond to what they're doing,
Is it possible that a person can be under such stress that there's no psychic state for a dream?
I don't know.
If you put them in therapy, you might find the answer out there.
There's one more question.
Yes. Well, everything I've learned is that everybody does dream. I mean, you cannot not dream. And people do dream and keep tired from sleep for days and days. When they do sleep, you know, they go mad when they forget to stay in the RNA and they get all that up. But the question I wanted to ask, I mean, I'm really interested in the suggestion that the embryo, or the fetus, for I don't know how many months?
Three, the third trimester, so for 3 months.
For the first?
The last.
For the last trimester. Okay, well, that interests me because I'm just wanting to speculate that this being is on this spiritual, heavenly plane half most of the time. And that, because I like to believe that when I go into a dream, I am connecting again with that eternal place. And so I would like to know more about whatever we can learn about.
But when you're pregnant, you're also in REM sleep much more than when you're not pregnant.
That's a PhD epidemiology and
has nothing to do with
sleep. Biology, and you know what?
Do you have any documentation to this thing about what's
Well, this book has the statistic about the 100% of time in REM sleep for fetuses. And as far as, if you wanted to do some sort of anecdotal research, interview children about what they dream. Little children that can talk to you. I mean, the problem is, the fetus can't talk to you, neither can the smallest child, so you can't really know what they dream. It's the same thing with the cats and the dogs. But when little kids start to verbalize, they will tell you their dreams. They remember their dreams, and they have outlandish, wild dreams they've had no experience. Well, sometimes they have wild dreams where they've had no experience with these things they're dreaming about, but certainly I agree that it could be messages from God or reminders of where they've been. Yes?
One more.
Not long ago, I watched a documentary on CBS called The Wild Man of Borneo. It was a lot less exciting than the title, but it was a story of two white men who were in the jungles of Borneo, and they hired a guy who used the same method as Harriet Tubman to travel through the jungle. That was basically his dream of his map. And that was so fascinating to me, to think that somehow that method that Harriet Tubman must have been taught to her by her ancestors, as this man's method was taught, and that somewhere in the depths of our traditions as human beings, this is a secret that has really been the foundation of our society. And what you're doing is inviting us back to that. Well, why not? A foundation is a good thing to have.
Yeah, minds are very powerful. We have no idea how powerful they are. But I know you've probably experienced this where you knew you had to get up the next morning at a certain time, but you didn't have an alarm clock you could set, right? And so you set your mental alarm clock and you were up by that time, no problem. This probably happened to you a dozen times. Well, that kind of power is, I think, the same power that dreams have. If you go to bed at night and before you go to sleep, you say, I really need to get an answer to this question, your mind can start to answer that question for you while you're dreaming. And there's lots of cases that are documented of that happening, and I see people thinking in their head, yes, it's happening to me! Woo! So.
Well, thanks for coming.